You've heard me talk for years about the breakthrough health benefits of CBD. Now, our friends at CV Sciences have developed an innovative suite of non-CBD products that mimic CBD's healthful effects. CV Sciences' new Plus Health CBD-free line of gummies and capsules. The Plus Health Clarity gummies are packed with DMAE, lion's mane, and rhodiola designed to boost your cognitive performance, enhance memory, and provide natural energy. You need a little peace and calm? Plus Health's Peace Gummies, soothing blend of L-theanine, lemon balm, and St. John's wort support serenity and relaxation without the drowsiness. And if you're on a journey towards optimal health, the Reshape capsules are packed with powerful ingredients like berberine and OEA to support metabolic health and help maintain healthy blood sugar levels. For more information and to order, head over to pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman. Use coupon code Hoffman30. For 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for the new Plus Health non-CBD collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today, we're going to do a deep dive on the longevity movement because there is a prospect, some believe, that we can attack the fundamentals of aging itself and thereby prolong lifespan and, most importantly, health span. Each of us contains kind of an aging clock. Our biological clocks are ticking. Some people believe it's inevitable that will result in our demise, even if we can fend off most of the illnesses that tend to curtail our lives these days, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, etc. Others believe that by means of attacking the very cellular processes that cause us to time out, that we can overcome aging barriers. With us today is a proponent of the latter proposition. He is a self-professed longevity hacker. He's Chris Mirabile, founder and CEO at Novos, N-O-V-O-S, the first ever company to develop science-based solutions to slow down aging and increase human lifespan. He's been all over the media. He's been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Fortune, Business Insider, Vogue, GQ, and he knows a lot about biohacking. So without further ado, here's Chris. Chris, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, indeed, you have an interesting background story because you had a kind of a brush with mortality at a very young age. Did that in some ways prompt your quest to achieve longer life?
Yes, it very much did. If anything, it prompted the quest to avoid disease more so than to live longer life. But by avoiding disease, you can thereby live a longer life. So especially in the world in which most people end up passing away from a chronic illness prematurely, I would argue, that's where the interest in longevity came from. So what you're referring to is an experience I had as a teenager. So I was 16 years old and I was on a school trip in New York City. I was the only one on that school trip from my school. It was the Wall Street Finance and Economics Club, and I was the sole member at my high school. And I was taken in by my one of my teachers.
So you were already listening. A budding finance bro at that young age, right? Had an interest in that.
I wouldn't go as far as saying bro. I wasn't that type of guy, but yeah, I was a budding finance enthusiast, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I was at the Federal Reserve Bank and listening to one of the bankers there speak to us about the financial system and so on. And when I suddenly started to feel dizzy and nauseous out of nowhere, I didn't want to cause a scene. So I said, I'm going to count to 10 silently to myself. And if I still feel this way at 10, I'm going to get up to get help. I hit 7. And for a fraction of a second, I thought I was feeling better. And before I knew it, I actually woke up on the floor. Goodness. And I had blood all over my shirt because I had a seizure and I severed my tongue.
Whoa.
And the whole room was cleared out at that point. It must have been a few minutes. I don't really know how long it was. My teacher was trying to call 911, and the security at the bank wouldn't let him because of the large amounts of gold, an undisclosed amount that are in the that's in the basement of the Federal Reserve Bank. Some argue that it's the largest supply of gold in the world, at least at that time.
This could have been part of the plot of some sort of heist movie where they send in a guy who creates a distraction, and then the perpetrators end up accessing all the gold.
Exactly. Well, you know, maybe that was our plan, but it got foiled. Eventually, they let him use the phone and called 911. Ambulance came, and I had to wait for my parents to come because I was a minor. But eventually, they gave me a CAT scan, and they found, as the doctor said, a large mass above my left temporal lobe, which they believed to be a brain tumor. And then they did the MRI and assessed it and concluded that it was. So I had a pilocytic astrocytoma.
Oh, okay. That's a kind of a bad one. I mean, they've kind of range in malignancy from relatively benign, not life-threatening, but have to be operated on, to potentially life-threatening. And that is, I think, in the category of potentially life-threatening, right?
Yeah, and the biggest issue was the size. It was larger than a golf ball already, mm-hmm. so it had been growing for quite some time, and it was pressing up against my brain, and that's what caused that seizure. And so they declared it an emergency. They wanted to do surgery the same day.
Yeah.
But we actually ended up pushing it back by, that was on a Thursday. It's actually, wow. So today's October 15th. So the anniversary of the discovery is October 19th. So it's in 4 days.
And congratulations. I think you've surmounted that by about 25 years or so.
Yes, I have. we ended up delaying it until that Monday because there was a world-renowned neurosurgeon who was coming back from the Middle East where he was doing an operation. And so we decided to wait. And fortunately, everything went smoothly. I do joke if I forget someone's name that I'm missing half of my brain, so you can't blame me for it. But other than, you know, an occasional lapse of memory, everything seems to be back on track.
Yeah, well, I guess I don't have an excuse, so we're all susceptible to those brain farts, so-called. Right, so this prompted sort of a change in your outlook about life itself. Life is a precious commodity. Problems can arise. And so thus began your quest to optimize health span, optimize your personal health, but also now via Novos, a project to develop science-based solutions to slow down aging. So tell us about the origins and purpose of Novos. It seems to be, you know, part of an emerging trend. A lot of people are looking at not just combating disease, which is a laudable goal, but also to attack the fundamentals of aging.
Yes. So it's been a long journey since then. So from 16 years old until about 30 years old, I was curious about why I got a brain tumor in the first place. I did genetic analysis. I tried to dig into that. I found some genes that increased the likelihood, though didn't fully explain it, but it was enough to satisfy me to feel like I had enough of an understanding of why it happened in the first place. And I found myself on PubMed all of the time doing research. And I came across, about a decade ago now, a scientific paper that's considered a seminal paper in the field of longevity called The Hallmarks of Aging.
Yeah.
And this paper looked at hundreds of other scientific studies, and it basically categorized all of the studies that were looking at lifespan and extension of lifespan and the reasons why the lifespans were being extended. And those are essentially mechanisms of aging or biological root causes of aging and eventual death. And so this was an eye-opening paper for me because it first of all made me aware that we can actually deconstruct aging. Like, it has component parts that we can try to then look at and target and perhaps slow down their degradation, which was an entirely new concept for me to consider. The second thing that I came to realize at that time was that aging is malleable. It is something that we can show in scientific studies that we can accelerate with certain substances or lifestyles, and we can decelerate again with lifestyles and substances. And then finally, what I came to realize was that aging is the number one risk factor for chronic illness. And when I say chronic illness, in particular, what comes to mind is cancer and heart disease and Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, sarcopenia, which is the loss of muscle as we age, glaucoma. I mean, all of these conditions, by far, an order of magnitude above other causes, aging is what's causing these. And so knowing all of this, then the question essentially evolved to, well, what can we do to slow down aging? And I started to find researchers who were asking that very question. And when I met with these researchers, I started to, you know, go to conferences at Harvard and MIT and so on, and to network with these scientists. It became apparent very quickly that there's really just two categories of people in the field. One was the academics who really wanted to understand the biological mechanisms. And then you had biotech, and these were companies that were trying to invent novel molecules that they could patent to try to address aging, essentially. But they had to do so by targeting a disease, because that's what the FDA requires for approval. And that's also what insurers require to make payments for these drugs. Or it was something even more advanced, like CRISPR, right? Like genetic modification. But there was nothing accessible for me or my loved ones to be able to use to try to address these mechanisms. So that's where I started to play around with some concepts that eventually led to what Novos is.
So it's interesting because the National Institutes of Health, as you mentioned, they break it down, you know, diabetes, cancer, cardiovascular disease, and by vanquishing these diseases, ultimately, neurological diseases, cognitive decline, these are the things that are the limiting factors on human life and health span, we can, perhaps reach our limits, our natural limits of longevity. It's thought, maybe that's 100. There's very little in the NIH budget, federally sponsored, that looks at, the figure, but I think it's in the, we're certainly not talking in the hundreds of millions. We're talking, maybe double digit millions, if that, to look at the fundamental process of aging, which you say there's scientific documentation that there are certain hallmarks of aging, right? That I think there are 9 or 12. I mean, I'm not sure the number keeps changing, but that if we attack each of these and potentially all of them, that we can literally extend life. But conversely, there is a relation. It's not an either or. We may actually vanquish some of these diseases by attacking the aging process.
Yes. So if we look at these mechanisms of aging, one way to think about this is that these diseases of aging, their common denominator are these mechanisms of aging. So when the way that we have been looking at diseases is looking at a disease after it already sets in and then trying to find cures, miracle cures for cancer, for example.
Magic bullets. Right. Yep.
Magic bullet. Exactly. And so the perspective is shifted by biogerontologists and longevity researchers and so on, which is that if the common denominator for all of these diseases is aging, and we now understand that there are these mechanisms of aging, and we can also see that these mechanisms of aging are directly associated with, they're causally associated with the occurrence of these diseases, doesn't it make more sense to go upstream and to focus on these mechanisms of aging to prevent these diseases rather than focusing on a magic bullet to cure the disease? And an interesting figure is that this sounds very dismal at first glance, that if you cure cancer, we would only extend average lifespan by about 3 years, because if you don't die from cancer, you then will pass away, unfortunately, from something else, right?
This is actually one of the arguments against some forms of cancer screening. What they say is that, okay, you do the PSA, you do the mammogram, but the really, you may avert cancer, but then they look at, is there an impact on life extension? And maybe not, and even a decrement in quality of life during the time when you're getting aggressive therapy for these cancers.
Exactly, exactly. So at first that sounds very pessimistic, negative, dismal, but then when you change it, the perspective and look through the lens of longevity, and you understand that the common denominator for these diseases are these mechanisms, then it suddenly becomes hopeful that if we can address these mechanisms, we can potentially extend healthy lifespan by 10, 15, 20 years by addressing them directly.
So let's talk about what some of these mechanisms are. I believe it's, okay. Is it, how many are there? 9, 12? You know, what's the latest?
Yeah. So when the paper first came out just over 10 years ago, there were 9 original mechanisms.
Okay.
The same authors republished last year in 2023, and they added 3 more mechanisms to that list.
Okay.
And so the original 9 were mitochondrial dysfunction, so the power plants of our cells that convert the food we eat into energy. We have fewer of them, and they're less effective at producing the energy to power those cells. Next is cellular senescence. So these are, a lot of people call them zombie cells, although some of them actually perform a helpful function, but for the most part, they're causing damage because these cells aren't performing their function and the body should remove them. But instead, they're releasing—
Loss of the natural process of cleanup.
Yeah, well, actually, that's one of the 3 new mechanisms of aging. But that process of autophagy that you're talking about should be identifying these cells and removing them. But for one reason or another, the body isn't, it's not being detected by autophagy.
Okay.
And the cells remain. Those cells release something called a SASP, a secretory-associated senescent phenotype. And it's essentially a inflammatory molecules that cause nearby cells to also get damaged and increases the likelihood that they also turn senescent. So senescent cells and all of these mechanisms for that matter become exponential as we get older. It's one of the reasons our skin wrinkles and our arteries harden is because of senescent cells that accumulate. Next is loss of proteostasis. So in the word proteostasis, it's proteins and stasis, so like the stability of those proteins. And so quick lesson on proteins is that, you know, proteins, it's these chains of amino acids, and they have to fold in a certain way to create a 3D structure that 3D structure is then able to perform its function and be an enzyme or stimulate a cell and so on. And as we age, the body isn't as capable of making them fold properly, and then you end up having like buildup of the proteins in the cells on the outside of the cells, and the proteins aren't performing the function as signaling molecules or enzymes and so on. Altered intercellular communication. So our bodies are vast networks. It's like information networks, and our cells are always communicating with each other as we age, partly because of what I just mentioned, the proteostasis, but for other reasons as well. The cells can't communicate as well with each other. The fifth one is genomic instability. So this is the classic DNA damage that we all know about.
Mutations, but also not just mutations, but changes in the way that DNA translates its information to our protein synthesis and repair.
Exactly. And the thing is, a lot of people don't know this, but our bodies have repair mechanisms to be able to detect damage to DNA and then go in and fix that damage. But as we get older, our bodies are not as capable of doing that, and there's more and more genomic instability, and that can ultimately lead to a cancerous cell, for example, which our immune systems should notice, and autophagy, as you mentioned before, should remove that cancerous cell, but sometimes that actually does not happen. And then the cancer can proliferate, unfortunately. The next is epigenetic alterations. This is a very popular one. People are very excited about this. So if you think of your genes as being like piano keys, your epigenome is which keys are actually being played. It's the music that our genes play. And when we're young, it produces a very young, healthy organism. With great smooth skin and beating heart and cognition and so on. But as we age, certain genes are expressed that shouldn't be, and those that should be are not. And they're eventually our bodies are not really tuned the way that they should. And that music doesn't sound like a great Vivaldi Four Seasons. It sounds like, you know, crashing down on the keys.
Right. So, or that's something junior high school orchestra.
Right, right. Sure. That's something that scientists like Dr. David Sinclair at Harvard has popularized, the idea of the information theory of aging, where the theory is that essentially we're more like almost like computer systems, where there's like, but on the DNA level, not binary code, and that the epigenome, we can reprogram it to a more youthful version of itself, which could then potentially make our organs and whole bodies younger again. And but we're kind of far away.
The epigenetic piece, does that have something to do with the popular methylation clocks?
It does, yes. Mm-hmm. So your epigenome is predominantly based on a process known as methylation. And when you methylate a gene, you're basically wrapping it up in a spindle and not letting it be exposed to this transcriptome, which is then going to create the RNA and then eventually create the proteins, as we talked about earlier. There are patterns that emerge with all of this, and these epigenetic clocks can look at which genes are methylated and are not methylated. And then based on these patterns and using large data sets, scientists have been able to then approximate how old you are biologically, which essentially equates to your disease risk, your mortality risk, and in some cases, not all clocks do this, but in some of the clocks, your quality of life metrics. So like, how likely is it that you can run and you have adequate cognition and your heart beats well and so on. They can approximate that with these epigenetic clocks.
And incidentally, I think Novos offers to the public some tests that are like biological age tests that are based on this technology. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, we do. So it's a simple finger prick, like a diabetic finger prick that you would use for a blood glucose monitor. And you just put a little bit of blood, about a nickel size, on an index card that you ship to a lab that we work with. And then we work with epigenetic clocks that we license from other institutions like Columbia University, Duke, and Yale. And we're able to tell people how fast or slow they're aging at this point in time, how old they are biologically, which is distinct from chronological age based on what I mentioned, or the mortality risk. And then also coming very soon, within a few weeks, organ ages, so right. Specific
that's
organ
the,
systems.
That's the new refinement of that, because it's one thing to say, well, overall, you know, you're 5 years younger, but maybe it'd be interesting to see, well, brain versus liver versus musculature, and break it down in that fashion, which now they've been able to do as the technology is refined.
Exactly, right. Because, you know, maybe you're biologically, like for myself, I'm chronologically 40, but biologically my results, depending on the algorithm, are typically in the late 20s. But what if I have the liver of a 45-year-old, right? Like that's what I now want to focus on, is liver health and improving that, because that's what my body needs most for me to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, in our kit, we also offer telomere length, which is actually a great segue to the next mechanism of aging, which is telomere shortening. So telomeres are the protective end caps of our chromosomes, and our chromosomes contain our DNA. And so you can think of them as like the caps on a shoelace. And then all of the threads in the shoelace.
Trivia, if this is a Scrabble trivia, the word for that is eglet, which is the thing that on the end of a shoelace that prevents it from unraveling. So you can put that into your presentations in the future.
An eglet.
It's a thing. E-G-L-E-T. Yeah.
Okay. I would not have thought it would be called an eglet of all things. But, okay. So the eglets of the shoelaces. If you think of the threads in that shoelace, that's essentially like your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And so the eglet is the telomere that is protecting that. And as you can imagine, if that eglet is getting shorter and shorter and shorter, eventually the threads start to poke out and they become unraveled and so on.
And
so
game over ultimately, yeah.
Ultimately, yes. And so when it comes to telomeres, what's most important is that you don't hit what's known as the telomeric brink. So as long as they're an adequate length, which there's a wide range of adequate length, you're fine. But once it gets a little bit too short, that's where things can start to go awry. For example, a higher risk of gastrointestinal cancers are associated with short telomeres. So that's the next mechanism. That's the seventh one. The eighth is deregulated nutrient sensing. So there are these nutrient pathways, sensing pathways like mTOR and AMP kinase. So want to spend the time, unless you care to go into what those actually are. But essentially, they're like growth signals or starvation signals that our cells are sending to each other.
And by the way, mTOR is the pathway that is influenced by rapamycin, which is becoming a popular biohack for longevity enthusiasts, and has some substantiation in the ITP, which is the study of longevity based on rodent lifespans. It's one of the few therapies that has actually borne out in actual experimentation that can extend life of rodents. Again, you know, a related species, but, you know, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for people.
Yes, that's right. But I will say that rapamycin is kind of like the, it's the star of the longevity research community, because every species that has been studied in, their lifespan has been extended, and by more than practically any other substance ever studied. There's logical reasons why it makes sense for it to extend lifespan. With that said, it's a prescription drug that's typically used to turn off the immune system during organ transplants. And so there's a different mode of administration, frequency of administration.
And dosage, I believe. It's not,
dosage. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like once a week high dose rather than daily high dose. And so an intermittent dosage that people take for longevity purposes, but nonetheless, there are still risks associated with it.
Yeah, some people report side effects of mouth sores, which is an indication that there's some decline in immune surveillance, because it is immunosuppressive, and people who have, most of us have type 1 herpes, oral herpes, but it lurks in our nerves. It only comes to the fore during periods of immunosuppression or stress, but if you deliberately suppress the immune system, some people might have some side effects. So this, I think the word isn't out on that intervention yet for humans.
Exactly. Though there are researchers in the field who are experts on rapamycin that also take it themselves personally. Yeah. So it just shows that they do believe in it strongly. But it is something that should be done with doctor supervision if you consider it, and also be aware that there are significant side effects, including the possibility of getting sick, like catching a flu or a cold and so on, is more likely after you take the rapamycin than not. So moving on from there, stem cell exhaustion. So most people have heard of stem cells, at least because they're hearing about their neighbor who's gotten them injected because of a knee pain or something like that. But stem cells, these are the cells that basically make duplicates of themselves. So we have a limit to the number of times our cells can divide. Eventually, it's called the Hayflick limit. Eventually our stem cells become dysfunctional as we age. So they die off, or they are no longer making perfect copies of themselves anymore. And so if you have a finite number of stem cells, eventually having fewer and fewer of them making perfect copies can have an impact on the quality of the cells being produced and our ability to restore ourselves when there's damage. Now, the three new mechanisms, we already mentioned one, which is disabled autophagy, the process of basically eating our own cells and recycling its component parts to, you know, create new cells once again, because these are old cells that are not functioning well. Another one is inflammaging. So it's a play on words, inflammation plus aging. It's because inflammation is something that happens within our bodies. But imagine it being like a quiet whisper when you're maybe in your 20s and in your 30s. It's like a hum. It eventually gets louder and louder and louder as we age. And so anything we can do to reduce that chronic inflammation is going to be good for us. And then finally, dysbiosis. So this is introducing
the microbe. I'm glad they include that, because that is part and parcel of, you know, our aging microbiome has an impact on our well-being health.
Exactly. Like, so what we see, for example, as we get older is our microbiome is less diverse. Mm-hmm. And also the bacterial species are associated more so with disease. If you look at centenarians, people living beyond 100, they actually have a more diverse microbiome than the average person does. And they have specific bacterial species that are associated with their old age, like Akkermansia, for example, is one probiotic strain associated with long life. So that's the 12 mechanisms of aging. And they all play off of each other.
Chris, you did an admirable job of that, and I believe without a teleprompter. So kudos to you. With a golf ball size of your brain missing, you're working on all burners.
Good stuff. So
this is a good point at which to pause, because I think we've laid the groundwork for our discussion of some practical solutions to the aging enigma. And that's going to be grist for the mill for part two. Our discussion today is with Chris Mirabile, who's a founder and CEO at Novos, a company that's developing science-based solutions to slow down aging and increase human lifespan. And Chris, give out the information for Novos. Where can people get more information? And you have a lot of information there. You have a blog, you have all kinds of things and offerings to listeners.
Yeah, sure. We're a public benefit corporation. So to that point, we have a free mobile app called Novos Life that you can get on iOS and Android, and it will give you personalized recommendations and AI, chatbot, and so on, many features on that. But our website is novoslabs.com. We're also on all of the social networks as Novos Labs. And I have a social presence as Slow My Age on Instagram and X and TikTok. And I'm also writing blog posts on slowmyage.com.
Okay, great stuff. When we return, more on the subject of extending human lifespan. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.